Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, Wisconsin. Hope everyone's having a wonderful morning so far. April is National Donate Life Month, and that is what the show is all about today. So President Biden, in his remarks last week, I wanted to read just two quick paragraphs from his remarks as he set up National Donate Life Month. Across the country, he said, organ transplants are being performed at a record pace because of the incredible generosity and courage of organ donors. America's doctors have performed over 1 million organ transplants to date. Each year, thousands of profoundly compassionate Americans chose to donate their organs, saving the lives of loved ones and people that they have never even met. Despite this progress, there's still so much more to do until every person who needs an organ receives one. More than 100,000 people, including nearly 2,000 children, are currently on the waiting list for an organ transplant, the majority of whom are people of color. While a shortage of organ donors and a high demand for them, 17 Americans die each day while waiting for a transplant. We can each change that. I thought those were profound words as we go into our show. I've never had a personal experience of having to wait for an organ transplant, and I've known a lot of people that have gone through it. Never a family member. It has to be really stressful, kind of full of unknowns, right? Changing timetables and tensions. But like many things in life, it can be made a whole lot easier. And since we're here on The Upswing to celebrate the possible, we're going to have conversations with people that care and do. And today's show is all about kind of putting the local lens on National Donate Life Month. I have a lot of questions, and I really want to know about the process and the needs. So hopefully today is an opportunity to raise awareness of how organ donation can not only save, but enhance the quality of lives. Organ recipients, Derek Lidstrom, a heart transplant, and Carl Jackson, kidney, are going to discuss their experiences prior to receiving a new organ, and they're going to give us insight into their current quality of life. Looking at the smiles across from us, I think their current quality of life is pretty good. You guys are looking good this morning. We're going to hear your stories, we're going to get your inspiration, and we're going to talk through the process. So Derek's an Iron Man, and when he tells you how many marathons he's done, You're going to be in awe like I was, like doing the research on Derek. Like, I'm not even going to tell you the number quite yet. You're going to have to keep on listening, but it's a lot. All right. I've done like 2 half marathons in my life. Derek's like hundreds past me. All right. He'll tell us his story. He was diagnosed with chronic heart failure in 2018 and kind of had a gradual decline after that until March of last year when he was placed on the heart transplant list. On December 3rd of 2023, Derek was gifted with a new heart. Carl's another wonderful, interesting person right across from me now. Worked at Eli Lilly for years. He was on dialysis for 7 years before receiving the kidney he needed. And we're going to hear Carl's inspirational story when we get back from the break. Dr. Beji Thomas is the medical director of Frederick Medical College of Wisconsin's kidney and pancreas transplant programs. He's going to provide us with an overview of the care that both Derek and Carl got, but talk about the need for organ donation. And again, because I want to know, he's going to let us know everything that's involved in the transplant process. In addition, I'm hopeful that he can dispel some of the common myths surrounding donation. I think there's a lot of those out there, and give us what we need to know. So if you want to, you can become a living donor. Dr. Beji Thomas, Derek Lindstrom, Carl Jackson, it's going to be a celebration and conversation around National Donate Life Month today on The Upswing. I'm grateful you're here. You're listening to WTMJ. I'm Jeff Sherman, and we'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Dr. Beji Thomas joins us today to talk about National Donate Life Month. Dr. Thomas, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
All right. So what first got you interested in transplantation specialty? As you're kind of going through the litany of and over medical school, like transplant, what was your path to that interest?
So I was a nephrology fellow at the University of Connecticut.
Okay.
And during my fellowship, it was quite dramatic. We got to see these folks that had a transplant. So when they got the transplant, the question was, when is your next dialysis session? You know, they would say, wait, I don't have to go to dialysis anymore. I can actually just go home and come to see you in clinic and, you know, not go to dialysis. So they really, you saw them get back to their life, be with their loved ones, not have to hang out in the dialysis center 9 to 10 hours a week. And that and the joy in their faces, and they're so happy to come see you. They can't wait to see you, and it's a lot of good news. Of course, there's potential complications and such, but really that energy that they brought really gets you involved and interested in transplant, in the transplant world.
What was your path to the Medical College of Wisconsin?
So prior to Wisconsin, I completed my training at the University of Connecticut.
Okay.
I did a transplant fellowship with the Medical University of South Carolina. I was on faculty there, and then the University of Maryland in Baltimore, and then most recently at the MedStar Transplant Institute at Georgetown.
Okay.
And then came here in October of last year.
All right. So far, so good in Wisconsin.
I love it. It's first winter here.
All right. Yeah. Powering through the winter. It hasn't been too bad.
Yes.
All right. So give us an overview of National Donate Life Month, kind of from your lens, and discuss the importance of organ donation, please.
Sure. I think it's very patient-centric, right? So it's a celebration of, you know, there are donors that can be deceased donors or living donors. So for one, the deceased donors is honoring them and their families and their loved ones that were able to donate these organs to folks to get off of dialysis, you know, have heart transplants and such. So it's really important to remember them. And I think the other part is the living donors and those folks that are alive that decided, you know, they went through a very extensive process to donate and went through a lot to be able to give a kidney up. And to appreciate them. And the other part, really, for me, is awareness. It's not only awareness to donate, it's awareness. For instance, chronic kidney disease is an epidemic in our country. Many patients don't know they have chronic kidney disease, so it's important for them to get checked up, follow up with their primary care doc. Because really, success would be that you never have to see the transplant doctor, right?
Yeah.
So important all those aspects, to celebrate those that have donated and also raise awareness in our community.
So how is it... I'm going to get into the process a little bit. Like, how is it determined if I or anyone is a candidate for a transplant in the first place?
Sure. Great question. So if you want to get on the kidney transplant list, your kidney function is usually about 20 to 25%, ideally when you get referred.
Okay.
One myth that you mentioned is you need to start dialysis to be able to get on the transplant list. No. Ideally, you're actually on the transplant list when your kidney function is closer to 20%. And then we can talk about living donation when you come in for the evaluation and such. So you come to us, you see the whole medical team, the surgeon, the nephrologist, the dietary, finance, and all the folks, the transplant coordinators, the nurses are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through this whole process of this evaluation day. You do the age-appropriate testing, if you need cardiac testing, cancer screening, what have you. And then we work with the referring practices to get that patient through that process to come to the selection committee and then get waitlisted. When you get waitlisted, as far as when will you get a transplant is a common question, right?
Right.
That's mostly based on if you were on dialysis, you gain some time, blood type, and also what we call HLA, or your antibodies to your body to other folks. So this helps determine, and some other factors, how fast you can get a transplant.
So what are some of the criteria for being placed on the waiting list for a donor organ?
In order to get, so your medical team, whatever transplant you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
for the nephrology, from our point of view, your kidney function has to be less than 20%.
Okay.
That's the top criteria.
Right.
Then medically, of course, being okay to go forward.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the advances in technology that you've seen. You know, obviously, improvements in organ preservation techniques and surgical procedures for sure. So discuss those a little bit more in depth, please.
Sure. So, you know, we are able to, you know, sometimes organs for kidney transplants, some of them, the cold time or the time for traveling from centers has gone up even beyond 24 hours. With modern technology and how we perfuse the organs, what you store them in, and surgical techniques have improved quite a bit. So a lot of the post-transplant wound complications are down considerably due to the wonderful surgical techniques. They actually use robotics, something that we use at Freighter. So you can use that as well to minimize how invasive the procedure is, and a lot of other technologies, including even if you want to see if you're a quote unquote a match for someone, right. you don't need their blood to have come to your center. You can actually do it virtually. Hmm. So there's a way to do this. So there's lots of advancements to expedite that organ transfer.
And during that waiting time, what's the interface in the conversations between the potential donor and is it direct with the doctor? Is there an app? Like what does that process look like?
Sure, sure. So if it's a deceased donor,
okay.
then there is an organization will talk to the family or the loved ones of that person who's passed away, and that organ will be procured, and then basically what we call a match run, so depending on how long patients have waited for and such, and their blood type and those things, they'll go on this match run, and several candidates say that come up for an organ, and based on the distance from the hospital for that donor, which is what we call a 250-mile radius,
okay.
they'll decide which hospital will that organ be offered to. That medical team will review the offer, and if they feel it's appropriate for their patient, or they'll pass on it, and they'll go down the list until the organ is accepted. For living donors, it's actually two separate processes, so the recipient is kept separate from the living donor. Hmm. They don't actually know about each other. The processes are very separate until the time of transplant, per se, or if the donor wants to let the recipient know.
Okay. Dr. Biji Thomas joining us today to discuss National Donate Life Month. When we come back on the upswing, heart transplant and marathoner, Derek Lindstrom joins us. His inspirational patient story. Man, 114 marathons under his belt and more coming. This is The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. April is National Donate Life Month. The WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. If you have texts and questions as we're talking to our doctor and patients, please chime in and I will do my best to relay them. So a patient story. Derek's a former road racer with 114 marathons and a ton more races under your belt. Personal best marathon, Derek?
What's 229.
229. Wow, That's moving. I love it. So you kind of had transitioned to trail running. You were diagnosed with chronic heart failure in 2018.
March 3rd, 2018, yeah.
Okay. And after that, kind of, gradual decline, and then you were placed on the heart transplant list.
Correct.
So give us kind of the overall, that's setting the table for the heart story of Derek. Give us the Derek Lindstrom story a little bit bigger than that.
So, yeah, it was interesting I was diagnosed with chronic heart failure on March 3rd of 2018. I had done a 21-mile run that morning. I just wasn't feeling well that day, slurred speech, so I brought myself into the ER, and that's how it all started.
Any symptoms before that, the years before, as you were running or lifting or working out?
You know, I was getting slow, but I just attribute that to age. You know, I was getting older, you know, just not as fit as I was, you know, and that. But I went in that day, and it was the start of, we had talked earlier, I just wonder, had I not gone in that day, could I have been two or three more years before I knew anything? Mm-hmm. You know, I still continued to race, and, you know, I don't know.
And you just had that sign that, like, I need to go in and get checked because it's bugging me enough that I can't put this pain off anymore.
Correct. Yeah. The slurred speech was the big one. And, but it was... That's how it started.
So did that, it sounds like a weird question, but did that slow you down or did that speed you up knowing that you didn't know what the future could bring?
In the way of like workouts and racing?
Exactly, right. And life in general.
You know, I kept doing what I was doing, you know, and I honestly, I still didn't feel that bad, you know, so I could still go run, I could bike. I was still doing, you know, half marathons. And funny, that next summer I did a marathon up in Leadville, Colorado.
Okay.
So that would have been June of 2019. Not my fastest time.
And the doctor said that's totally fine.
Sure.
All right. Well, okay.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, I was trying to do this series out in Leadville, these five races, and it was a 100-mile run, 100-mile bike and stuff like that. And as I got through the summer, I realized, yeah, that wasn't going to happen. So.
Okay. So continuing on, you know, what was the waiting process for a new heart like?
Well, for me, it was years. We knew what the end goal was. At some point, I was going to get a heart, you know, and was it going to happen in 2020, 2022? It just kept that slow decline. And finally last March 17th of 23, I got enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kept declining. And I had a couple episodes where I guess you could say I died and my defibrillator zapped me back to life.
Okay.
2022 just kind of sped up that process and, you know, and...
So any fear as you continue to work out and just live life, or do you just kind of have the mentality that, you know what, this is going to happen eventually and all is going to work out for the best?
Yeah, you can't put life on hold.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we looked at it, that just, you know, be smart about it. You know, I wasn't going to run another marathon or what have you, but you got to work out. That's what we do. And we do enjoy life and travel and, you know, that's what we did.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm a runner too, not a marathoner, as I said. What are your kind of suggestions for the everyday athlete? You know, if you feel something, when should you get checked out, and kind of what does that look like for the everyday athlete?
Well, I got to tell you, I was one of those guys that never went to the doctor. I mean, 30 years of, as most people probably, and it's completely different now. I mean, had I not gone in, you know, that March 3rd of 2018.
So were you getting your annual checkups before that?
No.
At all? No. So no blood work, I mean, no annual physicals, no nothing?
30 years without an annual checkup. I mean, it was a long time.
Right.
You know,
okay.
Just, I never had any issues.
Yeah.
You know,
because you were a marathoner, you're a runner, you were in good shape.
Strong.
Everything's
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Dr. Thomas, if what's your suggestions along the lines of the annual checkups for males or females or anyone?
Great question. So I think that it's important to keep up with your checkups. You can feel healthy and be fine, and everything is smoldering below the hood, in a sense. For instance, with kidney disease, many patients don't know they have kidney disease until they actually feel the symptoms, and that might be at... So you might actually not feel symptoms until very late, when your kidney disease is actually less than 20%. So it's important to keep up with your primary care, follow-up, and checkups for all these things that could be there, but you won't realize they're there until actually they show up in that way.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's so incredibly important, because you never know what's going on in the heart until you're checked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you suggest in terms of specifics in terms of getting the heart checked? Like,
right. So when you go to do your primary care doctor and physician and they see you, the basics that they do is age-appropriate testing, for instance.
Okay.
If you complain of shortness of breath or dizziness, they might do an EKG. Then maybe an echocardiogram, or to refer you to a cardiologist. So sometimes these symptoms are very subtle, and that's why it's important to go to get that history and then get that checkup and then refer to a cardiologist as it needs to be done.
Okay. Derek, when's your next race?
Actually, on 27th of April, the Cream City 5K is in town.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely.
We're going to meet Carl Jackson and talk about his journey back from a new kidney. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. A great conversation today. Inspirational conversation around National Donate Life Month with Dr. B.G. Thomas, Derek Lindstrom, and Carl Jackson. So Carl Jackson's going to join us in a minute here and kind of give us his story from the kidney transplant lens. But I've gotten a couple questions, and Dr. Thomas, you're probably best to address this one. Just simply from the 920, can you donate any organs, if you've had cancer? What does that screening process look like?
Good question. Thank you for that question. So when a potential donor comes forward, they fill out usually a health questionnaire, and that questionnaire is very extensive. So during that time, I would tell the potential donors, don't worry about your medical history. That is our job to figure out how you can move forward, if you can move forward. The thing would be that's great is if you can fill out that questionnaire, someone will give you a call, discuss if you can move forward or not. There are obviously absolute contraindications. So if you have active cancer, if you have significant diabetes or uncontrolled hypertension or other issues, you might not move forward. But my statement would be fill out the questionnaire and let us sort it out. Because cancer is not at all encompassing where there are different kinds that could, it might not even be cancer, it might even be precancerous. And then we have a shared decision model we discuss with you how to move forward.
Trust the medical professionals. That's good advice, right?
Yes.
Dr. B.G. Thomas is the medical director at the Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin's Kidney and Pancreas Transplant Programs. Derek Lindstrom, one other question coming in from the 920. It's amazing, the texter says, that people think marathons are healthy. Running is an extreme sport, pushing us beyond the body's limits. knees, hips, everything. How do you get through it all, and how aren't you suffering a little bit more than you already are?
I never had any overuse injuries. I never.
Really?
And it's
good stretching, good genes?
Yeah, probably good genes.
Yeah,
or anything else, but it wasn't a big stretcher back in the day. But just something that we did. You know, and you end up with all your friends. You get into that group, and they're all active, and they all run, and that's what you end up doing.
I always like to ask runners, so you run for the body and the holistic nature of it all, or do you just need it for your headspace? Because that's me. Like, I need to run to just, all right, I need the serenity of it.
You know, I used to train because I had some talent with it so I could win. And, you know, that pace is really addicting, you know. And, you know, back in the day, chasing money and stuff like that. And, you know, then it's just a lifestyle, you know, and it's... You know, on Saturday mornings you're doing long runs with your buddies, and Thursday night pub runs is just what you do.
What you do.
You know? So right. And you get dinged up. You know, you get people get injured, you get hurt, but you know, technology's in shoes now is amazing, where you can get by with a lot of stuff.
So. Yeah, a lot of new shoe technology for sure. So Carl Jackson, thanks for joining us to give us your story around your kidney transplant. Give us your story, Carl.
Well, thank you, first of all, for this opportunity, and thank you to all the donors out there. Because of you, I'm able to be here. I lived in Indianapolis for 27 years. And in December of 2017, for the holidays, I came back to Milwaukee. I was born and raised here.
Okay, came back for family.
Came back for family for the holidays. While I was here, my family recognized a change in me with regard to my breathing and with regard to my appearance, and had some concerns. I have people in my family that are in the medical field, and it was time for me to go back to Indianapolis on that Monday. And they said, Carl, if you don't mind, we'd like to take you to the doctor to get checked out. And they took me, and the doctor walked into the emergency room and said, are you familiar with dialysis? And I said, I have family members that are in it. He said, well, you have end-stage kidney failure. And so it was at that moment, December of 2017, that I found out that my life would change.
Okay. Well, we got to take a break, but I'm going to come back and continue your story, talk specifically about your recovery, how long you had to wait for a new kidney, and much, much more. We are celebrating National Donate Life Month today on The Upswing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing. Happy Friday, a celebration of National Donate Life Month with Dr. B.G. Thomas from Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, Derek Lindstrom. Derek's a heart transplant recipient, and Carl Jackson, who's a kidney transplant recipient. I want to talk more about the kidney transplant process with you, Carl, and with you, Dr. Thomas. Mm-hmm. So the time in terms of the process, you find out you need a new kidney. How long was that, and what was your regular dialysis appointments?
Right. So I was on dialysis 3 days a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for me. COVID came in 2020, of course, and I approached my doctor and asked, because of social distancing, if I can go down to 2 days a week. He approved, and so I was able to stay on 2 days a week. 3 years after being on dialysis, I decided to get on the transplant list. And from there, I was able to go regularly to meetings and appointments at Froedtert. The team at Froedtert was tremendous and continues to be tremendous, and walked me through just as all the things that Dr. Thomas explained with regard to the team, the finance, the this is how that's going to go. They were amazing, and that kind of eased my anxiety with it. And so from that point, every year you go and you meet with that team, and they give you updates. If there's any testing that needs to happen, I was also a cardiac arrest. I have a defibrillator in my chest as well. So my heart was an issue at one point, but Froedtert eased my mind on that and was able to say, no, your heart is fine. We tested it, and we'll go ahead with the transplant. So after 3 years from that, I got the phone call June 15th of 2023 at midnight, saying that the doctor believes he found a donor for you. If you are able to come in, we'd like to offer you that kidney. I said, I'll be there. I'm on my way. And I don't drive. Yeah. I took an Uber.
Okay.
All right. I told the Uber driver, I said, believe it or not, this may be the first, but you're taking me to get a new kidney.
All right.
At midnight, so.
A little extra tip for that Uber driver, right, probably, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So, Dr. Thomas, we all have two hopefully healthy kidneys, right? How are we able, I don't know, how many questions you get around, well, what if I donate one of my kidneys? How do I survive with only one? Like, I need to know that. I need to know the medical explanation.
Wonderful question. So when this question is really the first question we get when we walk into a living donation room or when we're just talking to folks about living donation, right? In essence, you have two kidneys. You actually, the kidney function can be 100-120%, let's say at normal range. So when you lose, if one of the kidneys donated, you lose roughly 20-40% of your kidney function, right? So let's just make the math easy. So if you have 100% function, you lose that 40%, and now you're left with 60% of function, right? During your lifetime, you should not, if you've qualified for being a donor, you're the cream of the crop. You're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So you should not see dialysis or hopefully not chronic kidney disease and such. And that's what we tell the patients. And we test them thoroughly for all those diseases that could lead to chronic kidney disease. And we advise them on, you know, staying in shape, watching their weight and all these types of things, taking their history and background, all of this into extensive testing. Because we don't just take the kidney. You have to go through quite a rigorous process to get there. And then we share with them all that we found, and with them together, we come to a decision to move forward with the transplant. So again, yes. So if you donate one kidney through all this regimen of being evaluated, you should be good.
Absolutely, every recovery process is different. But mm-hmm. if I'm going to donate one of my kidneys, am I out a week? Am I out for 1 week? Am I out for 1 month? Am I out for 6 months? Like, what is that recovery for me?
Great question. So actually, we were talking, and we haven't even had marathoners donate yet. Like, when can I go back to running? So typically the patient comes in to donate. They're out of the hospital within 24 to 30 hours, let's say. So they're usually overnight in the hospital and they're out the next day. And we say about 4 to 6 weeks, take it easy. No, very strenuous exercise. And then they go about their life, as they wanted. And we check in with them about 3 weeks after and then through that first year. And we encourage them to continue with the primary care doctor. And we're always there for them.
Okay. When we come back, Carl, I want to hear about your recovery and what you're doing. Hopefully you're back to everything wonderful in life. I want to talk about compatibility in terms of the donation process. And we'll dive into a special event that's coming up April 10th, next week at Frederick. This is The Upswing. It's National Donate Life Month Awareness all show long. We'll be right back. 'Cause I can't love you more than my own damn. Welcome back to the Friday edition of The Upswing. Appreciate you being here. It is all donation on the celebration of National Donate Life Month. Wrapping up our conversation with Dr. B.G. Thomas, Derek Lindstrom, and Carl Jackson. So, Carl, your recovery, are you back to living life with a new kidney in the way that
you
thought it would be?
Absolutely. I travel a lot. I walk 3 days a week down at the lake during the spring and summer. So, since the transplant was in June, I was able 3 months after that to go down to the lake and try my hand at walking. It was difficult at first. I tried to do an hour, 30 minutes one direction and 30 minutes down the next. And initially it was hard, but it was one foot in front of the other, as Derek was saying. Was able to complete the complete hour. And then I'm back to traveling and able to do and go as I normally did.
So, okay.
Love it.
All right. Very good. That's good. That is inspirational for sure. So, Dr. Thomas, how can I or anyone, how should I begin a conversation with my family if I want to donate my organs? Like, is it all on me, or what are those family conversations what do you recommend for patients?
I think it's a very personal decision. So maybe talking to a singular person at once instead of four or five people in the room. And then what we really tell the patients, whoever you're most close to, who knows you well, have a discussion with them. Particularly with living donation, we tell the patients, nobody is trying to sell you anything today. When you go home, discuss it with your family, discuss it with your friends. And when you discuss this, think about the possible complications for you. Think about 20 years down the road. Many times a 25-year-old or young person comes in, and they should qualify, they should be healthy. But I ask them, if you're 60, are you going to regret this decision? So just things to think about and to discuss with their partner and their loved ones and their family.
Okay. So what's the process then for the national registry donation?
So when you come in to be a living donor, you might, during that process, when we see if you're quote unquote a match for your person, the person you're trying to donate to, which is direct donation, Or even if you are a match, you can still do this. So the National Kidney Registry, which is what NKR is, they are an organization that allows for individuals with a living donor but does not match them to go into a database to find another couple with the same issue, basically,
okay,
that can donate to them. There is also something called compatible exchange where you can find a kidney that is a closer match to you than your person. You can still exchange that way. But it's a great program, great service, and Frater at MCW is a part of that.
So the... Can I just simply opt in through the driver's license process? That seems to be like what mm-hmm. people attach. You're like, ooh, I can right. just check this box and I'm in.
Right. So if you that's definitely, you can be considered to be a donor.
Okay.
Depending on what happens to you at that time of your life, you know, how sick you were, if you had an infection, et cetera, that's the medical team will evaluate you and say, this is what we can donate or we cannot accept this person as a donor. And then you would move on.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's good to know. There's a process after that, but that's right. a really good first step that way signifies, hey, we want to donate an organ
mm-hmm.
and I'm on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right. Derek, what's coming up in terms of your next runs and what are you looking forward to?
April 27th is the Cream City 5K.
Okay.
Here in Milwaukee. It's a benefit run for Donate Life. Fratert, is a big part of the race and stuff.
Okay.
And my wife and I did it last year, being listed, you know, right after I got listed and whatnot. So it'll be fun to come back and do it this year with a new heart and, you know, probably a little slower than last year, but it'll be, you know, fun nonetheless.
So. Okay. And do you have other heart transplant runners that you have a good group with that you run regularly with?
No. I think I'm in a lonely group.
Okay.
You know, so it, and it is more of, you know, walking, running right now.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
It's getting back out there. So.
Okay. Do you think you'll get back to a marathon eventually?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, all right. If you can do it, I'm putting it on my list.
Right.
I'm going to have you as my guide right. along the way. All right.
So yeah, we have a group going down to Indianapolis in November to do the Monumental Marathon, and we're all registered for that. And
we'll have to get them to go to the Transplant Olympics.
Okay. That's very
Olympics.
Good.
Yeah, that's...
All right. Well, we got about 30 seconds. BG, why don't you tell us about the Donate Life flag event next week?
So there's this wonderful event at MCW Frater Hospital where we raise the flag for Donate Life, and it's a very celebratory event, and we will a few folks will speak, but the big deal is really honoring those that have donated and also honoring our recipients for all the work they do and their caretakers. So it's a wonderful event. If you can come out, that'd be great.
And we'll have 100 seconds of silence that's going to represent the 100,000 patients that are waiting for life-saving transplants in the United States. And in Wisconsin, that number is over 1,400, too. Mm-hmm. So it's truly important that, you know, we get on the list, that we get checked out, we have our annual physicals, and that we celebrate life each and every day.
Yes, sir.
Very good. We thank you for your time, Dr. Thomas, Derek, Carl. Have a wonderful weekend. Appreciate your time. Keep living life to the fullest. This is The Upswing.